Friends from coast to coast, John B. Kennedy speaking. I'll return in a minute with comment on the news of the day.
The American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations now bring you John B. Kennedy, well-known commentator, with his personalized and individual analysis of the news. But first, listen to the following announcement. Maybe you've been with a crowd of friends or business acquaintances. The conversation switches to world events, and you find yourself at a loss to give definite, informed opinions on the controversial topics being discussed. Sure, you've read front-page stories, a few magazine articles, but one says this and another that. Either you can't form an opinion, or it's terribly one-sided because you don't have all the facts. Straight, accurate facts, like you get on America's Town Meeting of the Air, the timely radio forum designed to keep you well informed. Experts give you both sides of current questions, then you form your own views. Important questions are coming up with post-war days, issues you'll have to decide. Remember, you're the government. You pattern America's world course. Hear America's Town Meeting of the Air. Now, here's John B. Kennedy.
Latest word from the Argentine is that Colonel Peron, the man behind the throne or throttle of the Farrell machine throttling the country, he hasn't yet had nerve enough to order the military to quell demonstrating crowds. Buenos Aires witnessed a mass protest against the Argentine fascist regime unprecedented in South American political history. Our so-called Latin neighbors, who don't care to be called Latin because they have large infusions of Spaniards, Portuguese, Germans, Italians, Irish, English, and Indians, down below our good neighbors invariably revolt when a president is in office too long. Indeed, a simple rule of their simple republicanism is that a president who tries for a second term is luckier to get his second win, lamming it to parts unknown. More than 500,000 people paraded in Buenos Aires, and this despite transport strikes that tied up the capital and its environs. They made this dramatic gesture for democracy in face of threats by Colonel Peron in person over the radio the night before that demonstrations and disorders would be suppressed. The important Argentine newspaper, Critica, said manifestation of popular defiance and detestation of the Argentine regime was orderly and conclusive. If Colonel Peron was as confident and as cocky as when he snubbed the United States and caused even the mild Nelson Rockefeller to denounce his gang in the bitterest terms, he would have used his soldiers. The fact that he didn't is a confession not of strength as a restrained despot, but of weakness as a tyrant who discovers, as most tyrants invariably do, that they no sooner begin to tower than they also begin to totter. This bloodless uprising of the people of Argentina is particularly welcome as a symptom of their integral wholesomeness in face of persistent Axis attempts to debauch them with fascism. Hitler and Mussolini secretly regarded the Argentine as an Axis partner or puppet, and it's more than speculation that Hitler's first evil genius, Ribbentrop being runner-up, is in the Argentine or in Argentine Patagonia. He's Admiral Cunaris, head of the German Secret Service, the secret service, since before the First World War. His name is not yet to be found in any compilation of German war criminals apprehended. The Republic of Chile, celebrating the anniversary of its independence, deliberately snubbed the Farrell regime of Argentina by omitting invitations to its ambassador. And that overt act of unfriendliness by a neighbor provoked the people of Argentina to make known their desire for democracy and free elections, which Colonel Peron has had to promise. In this atomic era, a wholly democratized Western Hemisphere is a condition of security for all. Poland is at last getting something out of the war. The new western border of the country against Germany runs from Arlbeck to the western bank of the Oder River, opposite Schufenhafen, and includes the Baltic port of Swinemund, the old Slavic island of KXTLN, you can roll your own pronunciation of that one, plus the synthetic gasoline city of Paulitz and the fishing ports of Nuwarp and Ziegenort. This apparently cuts out the much-disputed Polish corridor and takes over several hundred square miles of German territory in the province of Prussia, which Prussia originally stole from the Poles. 13 American newsmen were allowed to enter Poland today, and the puzzle is who's been keeping them out, Warsaw or Moscow. Certainly, where American aid is going, American newsmen have the right to go, if only to report on distribution of American relief supplies. If any country appealing for help and getting it won't let in U.S. reporters, why send in the help? Correspondents call Poland's capital, Warsaw, the most frightfully damaged of any city they've seen. The U.S. and British embassies were special objects of German spite. They were partly demolished and wholly defiled. The Germans even dynamited the tomb of Poland's unknown soldier.
frightfulness of unspeakable ferocity has left its most hideous mark by hiatus in the Warsaw ghetto, the former confine of 700,000 Polish Jews within a space less than half a mile square. The most congested living area on all this earth, which is why so very many died there. The Warsaw ghetto is now gone. There isn't even a wall standing to echo startled footsteps. But somewhere in its hideous catacombs are 50,000 slain Polish Jews. Even after 2 years, the stench of death clings to the rubble of this charnel house. Now, these are not pleasant matters to mention, but they are our enemy's legacy. What impresses me is the indignation, sometimes too hot for the air, of American reporters, normally shock absorbers, who see the hellish work of the Nazis. Witnesses at the Belsham Brutes trial in Nuremberg demolished a defense claim that Allied bombing ruined communications. So the camp could not be supplied by testifying there were ample German supplies in untouched warehouses within walking distance of the Belsham camp. They also testified that the life expectancy of women prisoners in Belsham was only 12 days because of unspeakable conditions. Retired German General Axel von der Lockau, attending the Belsham trial, said he was horrified, as if the German general staff didn't know about concentration camps. Some, whom Hitler suspected, were sent to them. The usual touch of grim humor cropped up when the bestial Joseph Kramer let precede him into court his co-ed helpers, the six savage sisters of Belsham. Ladies first, he grinned. Criminals with a touch of humor are usually the toughest. Once on the way to the Bronx jailhouse with a prisoner in a cab, two detectives were arguing who should get out of the cab and buy some sandwiches. As they argued, the prisoner chimed in with, "Both of you stay right here while I get out for the sandwiches." The prisoner was Richard Bruno Hauptmann, who could even grin while being sentenced to the chair for the murder of the Lindbergh baby. Here's your announcer for a minute when I'll return.
The other day, Mrs. Bowen, a pleasant-looking woman, went down to the War Price and Rationing Board, where she'd been working as a volunteer during the war. She cleared off her desk, stuffed odds and ends into her purse, and went before the head of the board. "Now that the war's over," she said, "I suppose you won't need me anymore." Well, the head looked pained, but being a patient man, he said gently, "But you're wrong, Mrs. Bowen. We do need you now, very much. Right now, the changeover from war to peace is the greatest threat to inflation we've known. If we help control retail prices now, we knock that threat out. That's why you're needed now, you and all the other volunteers." Well, Mrs. Bowen looked rather sheepish. She hadn't realized until then how important it was for her to stay. It was a job she had been trained in that would be hard for someone else to step into now. And the same applies to the hundreds of thousands of volunteer workers throughout the country. Make sure that your job is finished before you quit. Let the duration in 6 months apply to you as well as soldiers. And now John B. Kennedy continues with the news.
Chief of Staff General Marshall said before a Senate committee today that it was probable the point system for release from the Army would be abandoned before winter. No finer tribute to a soldier was ever paid than Secretary of War Henry Stimson's parting address to newsmen when he anticipated General Marshall's place in history. He said General Marshall, after selecting commanders like Eisenhower, left them alone and backed up what they did. But he acted instantly in time of peril, as when, before the decisive Battle of El Alamein, German Marshal Rommel was beating back British Marshal Montgomery in a fight for Egypt. Rommel had superior tanks that smashed British armor, but General Marshall instantly stripped armored divisions still training with the newest tanks, sent the tanks to Africa, and so turned the tide of battle that ended in the desert victory and the end of Germany's dream to march through to the Near East and join hands with Japan and India. Mr. Truman, accepting Secretary Stimson's resignation, remarked that Mr. Stimson's stand when he was Secretary of State against the first Jap aggression in Manchuria back in 1931, had that been sustained, had the U.S. and Britain then sent an ultimatum to Japan or cracked down on her with Russian help, there would not have been a war. But Mr. Stimson was not supported in his far-sighted stand against Japan because the people of the Western democracies wanted peace at any price. And look at the price they had to pay for it. General Eisenhower's Berlin office reports the 82nd Airborne Division will be replaced October 15th by the 78th Infantry Division for occupation. 17 ships of Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet steamed out of Japanese waters today, taking home several thousand Navy personnel. Japanese demobilization is proceeding so smoothly that General Eichelberger says he has a soft job. He's put former Premier Torju, who tried to shoot himself in the heart, but evidently found out something we all suspected, that he didn't have one. Torju's been transferred to the common Tokyo Prefecture, Huskao. Admiral Kishisarabu Nomura, ambassador to the U.S. at the time of the Pearl Harbor attack, said that he didn't know of the attack.
Oh, hum.
Jap Premier Higashu Kuni gave out with a wish that Christian missionaries would remain in Japan and more follow them to teach the Japs the wickedness of their former ways. Well, it's hard to tell whether that guy's pious or merely pietistic. The Japs are going to reach a peak crisis in food and shelter in 3 or 4 months, and the pressing job is to awaken them from their days in defeat, to work their soil and their fisheries. For the United States has quite enough to feed without Japan. The shelter crisis here is only about to find a little relief with new flow of materials. In all big cities, living space is at a premium. In Canadian papers, it's common to see advertisements of $50 and $100 rewards to anybody who will find an apartment. The OPA is already cracking down on attempts to raise building and building up prices. A country that built the world's greatest navy, air force, and army in less than 3 years certainly can produce a needed 2 million or more new domiciles in a year, if there isn't a plague of strikes. MacArthur's completing his jolly little list of jolly little Japs who won't be missed when he's through with them. In Wiesbaden, the Yanks picked up Baron von Selesinski, a gay Prussian wolf who wore a monocle instead of a mind and was doing all right debasing French officers in Paris with what he called entertainment, until he made the mistake of liking one French girl too many and too much. When she disappeared with him, her irate father raised such a rumpus with the gendarmerie that alarms were sent all over to chercher la femme. And they found the girl because of her well-fed beauty in a city of hungry men. The gay baron is now behind different bars from those where formerly he flourished. Washington reveals today a U.S. Army system of re-education for German prisoners of war. Colonel Alpheus W. Smith of Evanston, Illinois, is personnel officer of schools of hundreds of German war prisoners in Fort Kearney, Rhode Island, Vanetta, New York, and elsewhere. Colonel Smith says the Army put these Germans, all of them volunteers for the course, through a double screening and actually knows more about each German than the average American employer knows about his individual help. The Germans are trained in American democracy. Many of them have simple evidence of being penalized for their anti-Nazi views in Germany. They were made shock troops in the fighting. They are also trained in police work and other community administration functions, and will be so employed under the American Army of Occupation. There's no mention of sports in their curriculum, but when Germany is genuinely a sports-loving nation, it's only been won partially. Their big student sport was the human hamburger or face-slicing duels. When a country really goes all out for clean sports, that's one sign it's civilized. Even if all games are not known to all men, in Spokane, Washington today, an athlete ambled into a hotel and called for his room reservation. The room clerk said he had none, as the Spokane Esmeralda Golf Open Championship was crowding the hotel. "I suppose it is," said the would-be guest, "but my name is Byron Nelson of Texas." "I'm afraid, Mr. Byron Nelson," said the clerk, "I can't accommodate you. You see, all our rooms are reserved for the golfers." So Mr. Goff himself had to try somewhere else. Here's Mrs. Ruth Brovan of Chicago telling it to Judge Edwin Robson that she figured out a scheme to stop her husband going out with other women. So while he was asleep, she cut off each right leg of his 6 pairs of pants. But that didn't stop him. He went out in a pair of overalls. Love will always find a way. There are just 2 systems for a jealous wife to make sure her husband doesn't go out with other women. System A, lock him up. System B, lock up all other women. Thank you. This is John B. Kennedy returning the mic to your announcer.
Say, have you heard about the corpse who was shot 6 times when only 2 bullets were fired? Well, pull up a gun and sit down. It happened during a gangbusters program. The whole show was built around a corpse who had been shot 6 times. Well, standing by to do the dastardly deeds were 2 sound men armed with guns. In case the first gun jammed, number 2 man was to use the cover gun. And then, if anything happened to that, another gun, gun number 3, would certainly work if number 2 failed. Well, it came time for the kill. Gun number 1 fired. Once, twice, silence. Gun number 2 didn't go off at all. And gun 3 just gave it up as a bad job. The 6-time shot corpse had been killed with 2 shots. A fact that was pointed out in more letters than the program likes to remember. Usually when someone is shot on Gangbusters, though, they're shot but good. The show makes good listening, and here's the news.
Gangbusters is now heard every Saturday night on most of the stations of the American Broadcasting Company. This is the American Broadcasting Company.